Hey everybody, this is Brian Quain. I'm with Before You Submit, BeforeYouSubmit.com. And with me, hopefully as always, I love to have him with me, Movie Brain Rot. We have Jim DeSantis.
How are you doing, Brian?
I'm very good. I'm actually getting over getting back into a cold. That is me. You have a list.
I have a list.
We were talking about lists.
We were talking about lists. We're talking about, what were we talking about again?
How people love their lists. People love lists, and I think it's good, though, because it really helps us go into, you and I could talk for days about anything, and keeping your list, I didn't make one, so now you are going to surprise me, and then we'll probably wind up going into days of subjects, but lists, people like lists.
Yeah, well,
I have to like them right now.
No, you have to like lists, but I think that, you know, the thing I was talking about to you before, and you know, it's a shame. I get confused, like, what we say to each other on the phone and what we say to each other in person and what we say to each other on here. So let me backtrack a little bit. We were talking before about, you know, remakes, and then we were talking about – then that got into another thing we were talking about.
Right.
Well, let's start here because this is something I want to talk about because I think this is good. We were talking before about how, you know, there's comedians and actors that made the jump from the realm of comedy –
right, and now they take
to a serious role.
Right.
And they've done a good job. There's some have done good jobs at it. And there's also, if you go backwards, I was trying to think of somebody who went backwards from serious to comedy. Leslie Nielsen, Airport 77.
Right.
All the airport films. Right. And then he ended up doing Airplane. And then now.
Saved his career.
Yeah, now everybody, like, you know, people that are probably born in the 80s don't know anything but Leslie Nielsen as comedian. But ask your parents, all those people, guess what?
Yeah, they
wasn't a comedian. Probably the most straight-faced person. The only reason why he worked in Airplane is because how straight-faced he was.
And all the hand comedy.
Exactly.
And I love that. I love
that. So it was like a reverse pull-in. So I was thinking back about, you know, some other people that did things that didn't work. Like they tried to, like, lighthearted comedies, and then they tried to do something serious. It didn't work, but the movie wasn't so bad. I remember we were talking before how I really like, you know, I don't know how you feel about Owen Wilson, but I love this creepy role in Minus Man.
Yeah, we did talk about my
but nobody really liked it.
I love that film. in fact, we are in the house of...
Nobody really liked it. No one really liked Minus Man at all.
Here it is.
Yeah.
I forgot who did the... Somebody I know did the was a director of photography. Yeah, Bobby Bukowski. This guy became friends with somebody I knew in L.A. That I worked on a film with. And I'll tell you... He was amazed that somebody actually talked about The Minus Man.
Really?
Yeah, because it is a good film. I'm not the biggest Jeanine Garofalo fan. Not the biggest.
Jeanine Garofalo's in it, and then there's some famous people in it.
Yeah.
I think it's right when he was having his little stint with, wasn't he having a stint with Crow at the time? I think was he dating Sheryl Crow or something like that was going on at the time?
Yeah, this might have been that. Yeah.
And then she's like a heroin addict in that movie as well. And he played, I don't want to spoil it to anybody, but I mean, if you watch, you know, right at the beginning, you're sort of seeing it behind, it's sort of like Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer.
In it.
She's in it.
Cheryl
Henry
Crow's
Portrait
in it.
Of a Serial Killer is sort of like what this is, kind of.
Right.
He's like a serial killer, and you're seeing it through his eyes.
In which you feel what he's going through, which I like that with serial killers. Dexter has more of that comedic. You watch. I don't have any sympathy for Dexter. If he got caught tomorrow for what he's doing, good.
No sympathy for him.
No, I don't. I really don't. It's a decent show. It's a good show. Vanessa watches it. I'm with her. I'll watch it. Jennifer Carpenter, I kind of like her, which I know we're going to definitely have to tackle her because of the remakes, her being in quarantine. This had people before. I mean, Sheryl Crow went the Dwight Yoakam thing, which Dwight Yoakam's in this film.
Yeah, nobody really, but what I'm saying is that nobody really liked Minus Man, but he took...
Dennis Haysbert.
This was a decent film. He took a chance on something.
Right.
And, the crowd didn't like it, you know. Per se. Mm-hmm. I mean, some smaller pockets did actually like it, but...
Did he go drama anymore after that?
I don't think he did anything on that level in a long... And I almost crushed him. I mean, after he did that, he was kind of silent for a while until he did, like, that Meet the Parents part. Was it Meet the Parents?
Yeah, it was Meet the Parents. Kibo just admitted I saw that film, but...
Everybody saw that film. It made, like, $100 million. Like, it was, like, the biggest grossing comedy at the time.
I never saw the sequel. So.
I think that even made more money. But
mm-hmm.
Other people, I was thinking, was a really weird one. There's another one I had on my list was there was other people like, you know, like Owen Wilson that we talked about. Vince Vaughn, how he did a really how people didn't like the fact he tried a serious role with Psycho.
Right.
There are some people that tried serious roles, didn't work. They went back to comedy, and then they went back. There's one person to think of, Bill Murray. Think about Bill Murray. He did a lot of comedies, Caddyshack, and all that. Then he did Razor's Edge, fell flat on his face. He came back with, I think he did Where's the Buffalo Roam?
Yeah,
semi.
Buffalo Roam. That wasn't that where he did. I
that was
a
Gonzo.
He was, yeah, supposedly he was Hunter S. Thompson.
He was Hunter S. Thompson in it. It had some
it
had some comedic elements in it, but it was panned. And then he went back to doing comedies for a while, Ghostbusters and all those. And then he comes back and he does Rushmore, I think, was the first one he did. Rushmore?
When you get into Wes Anderson, now you're in a good family. If you were to do anything
with
Wes Anderson, Wes Anderson's going to take
because
care
he has
of you because
like
I,
that.
Yeah, he has that, that anybody could like him. Indie can like him. Hollywood can like him. He's got that look of...
You're right about that.
Yeah,
and it's
like
a good, it was a good mix because it had some comedic elements to it, but it was undertone, like somebody was able to control Bill Murray. It wasn't like a Bill Murray film. Like, Rushmore wasn't a Bill Murray film.
These three directors, Wes Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson, and maybe the godfather of it all, Robert Altman.
Right.
You have those dynamic casts.
True.
You could do everything, anything after that. You could seriously sit on a toilet in a Robert Altman film. You are now...
You know what? You
do any film.
You just gave me another good one, too.
Jim Jarmusch.
Jim Jarmusch. Christopher Guest. Christopher Guest.
Exactly.
He pretty much made Parker Posey's career. I mean, like, she was like the under-the-radar kind of Clock Watchers, which was decent, but she was under-the-radar kind of an indie star.
Yeah, indie films.
And he kind of pulled her out, and honestly...
For Guffman, you know,
yeah,
the braces.
She, now she's a
he gave her. He gave her that that little thing, that little thing. Like here's your braces. Oh no, wait, that was in
Best in Show.
She had the braces.
But still, it's the same thing. And like he's kind of created that, and now Parker Posey. I mean, she could spin off and do another film, and you would still get the image of her in, you know, the Guffman films. You don't think back about her other films. You're always thinking about her all her stuff she did with Guest because that.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm saying to you. Like, that
kind of
spun her on her career now.
I mean, people could hate me right now because they're like, dude, come on, Brian, remember Hal Hartley, but it wasn't Hal Hartley. You know, it wasn't Henry Fool that broke her, and, you know,
I think it was
Christopher Guest. It really was, because the whole indie crowd loves Hal Hartley. You know, even Vanessa watches Hal Hartley, and she's like, I don't see what's so special about him. There's something really special.
Well, we have to, you know,
I think he's fantastic.
Because you're involved in so many festivals and things like that. I mean, you know this, that it's easy to get wrapped up in the indie crowd
and forget
the fact that, like, you're still trying to make a movie.
You're right, because when I go to New York, it's a total different conversation than what you and I are having. This is nice. I love this. You know, I'm glad I could tackle what more people know. This was done in New York, I don't think, you know,
conversation. Exactly. I mean, everybody's worried, and it's not you particularly, I'm saying everybody's worried about, you know, stepping on somebody's toes. If you mention something that you really care about, let's think about the word passion. I mean, are you passionate about something? I like surrounding myself around passionate people. You know, the films I like are things I'm passionate about. They're not always great films, but they're things I'm passionate about. Maybe at certain times in my life or, you know, certain attributes.
I like that.
Definitely. Like, you know, if I see a comedy on a bad day, even though it's a great comedy, guess what? It's a shitty comedy.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That can
I supposed to like Wedding Crashers? I walked out.
That's why you watch things the first week. By the way, if you get anything, watch things the first weekend because you come into no preconceived notions. You go in, cold. That's why festivals are good somewhat because you're going in. There's no trailers. There's
no
interviews. And that's why sometimes I come to you and I'm like, give me a top three so I make sure I hit them. And I always ask Brian Quain, B. Quain, you know, what I should hit first because you always give me a list of what I should hit. And that's when I go and that's what I take. I mean, I get my little book out.
The damn lists.
I got news for you, too. I don't hit you up for free passes usually either. I pay
my
money.
You do. That was a pen.
My money.
I'm not smacking Baron.
But, you know, as the tangents go, I just wanted to go back to, you know, Bill Murray, I thought, did a good job of, like, where, you know, he tried it once. It didn't work. He went back to comedy, and then he went back. And then I thought it was also a good turn to show you a
Wilson. He's an actor.
He's an actor.
He's full on.
I would have never thought that he was an actor.
Yeah, I mean, even the parts of Lost in Translation that I can't sit through, I'll admit it. He's an actor. Scarlett Johansson is an actress.
He's found something that's worked for him.
Yeah, definitely. Every time. Every time. I'll tell you. He knows. Trust me, after Lost in Translation and Rushmore, every fucking script in the world was given to him. It was like, here you go. And his desk was by, like, a skyscraper. And he was like, all right. He picked the ones that he knew what to pick.
He still picks
smart.
A cash cow every once in a while. Garfield. He still picks the cash cow.
Shit, that's
right. Which, I mean, but, you know, no offense to him.
The voice? Or was
he
the voice?
Just the voice. No offense to him. But Garfield made, I mean, honestly, Garfield made $100 million. And he had to supply a voice. I mean, these other movies, you know, take a lot of effort. And, you know, when we tell you something, Lost in Translation probably didn't make as much money as Garfield.
No.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, maybe in the long run.
And he got a sequel.
Yeah, yeah,
Tale
right.
of Two Kittens or whatever it
yeah,
was called.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, great.
So I'm just saying that, like, he still understands how to make his money, but he's still out there trying to earn his craft. He hasn't just completely cashed it in. You know what I mean? He's still working.
Yeah. He's a smart man. How about directors? Do we know any directors that have gone there?
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about a wide range director today, and I was listening to NPR this morning, and they were talking about Rachel's Wedding, and Jonathan Demme has done a whole variety of movies. Now, I'm not saying they've all been good. I mean, his comedies would probably be like Married with the Mob, maybe he did, I think. But then he did Silence of the Lambs, which is a weird one.
Yeah.
Then he did some documentaries, like the one on Jimmy Carter. And, so he's been all over the map. And then this new film he's done, it's called Rachel's Getting Married.
Rachel's Getting Married. Tunde's back. TV on the radio is Tunde. But before, as the indie people who are listening, yes, it's the same Tunde as Jump Tomorrow. Joel Hopkins, Jump Tomorrow, one of my favorite love stories told in a film. Great road trip film. Tunde, fantastic actor. People know him as the lead singer of TV on the Radio, but I know Tunde as Jump Tomorrow. And Rent It, Netflix, Joel Hopkins, Jump Tomorrow. I think it was 2002, 2003. Fantastic. This is his return to film, and I think it's amazing. I really think it's good to have him back, because people thought he was the next big thing. I mean, and it happened to be Joel was walking out of a building at school, saw Tunde, and was like, I think I want to use you in a film.
I never knew that story.
And then here he is now, like, in a band like TV on the Radio, which is huge, and now he's getting into a Demme film. I hope he does more. I really hope this guy does well.
The writer of that film, I mean, and probably one of the reasons why that film got made is because the writer of the film is Jenny Lumet, Sidney Lumet's daughter. I think, and so, like, you know, it's like Hollywood has this, like, whole spun thing where it's like, who do you know? How do you know who? I mean, just because you probably know this morning, just because you're a very we see a lot of talented people come through the festival. I mean, I see a ton of talented people,
yeah,
but it's a lot of who you know.
It
unfortunately,
is
that's what it is.
If you go to school, that was the first thing they said in film school was, you know, it is who you know, and the whole time you're going through film school, they are trying to make you forget that. It is now, we're going to make sure it's who you know, now who you know, and da-da-da. First thing out of film school, when it was like, here,
it's because they're still in film school, and they don't know anybody.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
the reason.
Exactly. So
if you
want to
teach,
like,
film school, that might be the approach to take.
Maybe that's what I'm not teaching.
That's probably there.
I love meeting the people.
You
and
do.
Hanging out. And, you know, I it's such a breath of fresh air when we talk about, you know, the people that's who you know, is when you go to the IFP market, which definitely people Google IFP, IFW now. It's all new filmmakers and who don't know the people and don't, you know, and these are all, it's just fantastic to see these mice kind of going through a maze, but we're not scientists, we're not letting them do it on their own, we're bringing them with us and kind of stuff like that. I think that's fantastic, and I love to see a breath of fresh air like that, and I think with indie festivals and indie films, it's such a nice breath of fresh air, and then you see where they're going.
Yeah, that's another way, too. That's a good segue. That's another way, too, of seeing directors early on that have tried something different. They tried something different early on, maybe in their festival circuit, and then it moved on to something
else. I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything. I guess this is a man who gives his whole fucking life to the open air. Kevin Smith, write it down. He has a film that he's working on. Now let's talk about Breath of Fresh Air. This is about a guess on any explicit, is because how has Kevin Smith made his money? On cock, fart, piss, shit.
True.
Fuck me jokes.
Even his
he
new
admits
film.
That. Yeah, I mean, hello, yeah. Zach and Mary make a porno. Hello. You're going to get Tracy Lords, and he explained how Tracy Lords got in it, da-da-da. But I just saw Kevin Smith about 3 weeks ago, and he has a new film called Red State.
I already love it.
It's
just
a good
word,
idea.
I like the idea.
It's a great idea. It's his first attempt to where he's going to tell the Weinsteins, look, this is not for you. I want to do this. Does anybody have the money? Let's do it. I don't want anybody trying to
No
influence.
Interesting.
And it's interesting. Oh, trust me. As much as I'm not a big Kevin Smith fan.
True. You're not.
I'm not.
I am.
Yeah. I was ready to be like, you got it. I have a jar full of pennies and I'm going to fucking give them to you. You know, it's like, and Red State sounds amazing. It sounds like a great idea. I'm excited to see where he goes with this. And
he's dropping genres, huh?
Yeah, he wants he's staying away from the comedy and he's going into a drama and doing it through the festival circuit.
Wow, that's the best way to do it. You know, that's funny you say that, because Kevin Smith is an awesome example of that, because there's a lot of directors that have tried things and failed and went back to what they've done. Wes Craven
was
one.
Do.
He may fail.
He may. And but you know what? To see him do something like this, he's a smart guy. He's a freaking smart guy that hopefully he'll do it.
He'll send his vibe out there through his core audience on Quick Stop Entertainment, I think it's called. His audience he has online, that he'll send the vibes out there and kind of get a feel like if he can make any money at this at all, because he's exactly. The king of marketing. I mean, the guy is still marketing Clerks, which is his first movie ever, which cost him close to nothing to make,
and now he's still making money on it.
Still, it's ridiculous.
Like jizz towels. I mean, seriously,
you're right.
It could be anything.
As soon as he came out with Clerks 2, he came up with Moopy Meals, for heaven's sake. He could buy the boxes and put them in there. And then listen to this. There's another thing too. I know we're getting off the tangent again, but Kevin Smith has, on his site, he has, like, all his movies are through different distributors. So what he does is, you can't sell them as a box set in the Kevin Smith collection. So what he did was, he had somebody design a box that you could put the DVDs in, and he sells the box. And that box is probably the biggest seller on a Kevin Smith website. The box to put the DVDs in, that have all the pictures on it from the different shows.
It's genius.
He's even selling a movie, he's selling a box. I mean, if you can sell a box that's like, what they say.
A box.
Like,
cardboard box.
A cardboard box.
$19.99. Like, I guarantee it. Yeah, $19.99.
Exactly. It's just crazy. It's $20
for something that costs about $1.35. Not even to make.
But, like, there's two horror directors. There's two directors. One's a horror director.
I saw you write that down.
And one is a comedic director. And both of them have tried to jump genres. And one it worked and one it didn't. The one that didn't work was Wes Craven. He did a movie that people don't remember. It came out. And it's not that it was a bad movie. I think it was called, not The Sound of Music, but it was something with music, and it had Meryl Streep in it. And she was, like, a teacher, a music teacher. And I don't have the name of it right now. That's the reason. It slips my mind. That's how out of the theater it was. In and out of the theater.
When was this?
Music at the Heart. Something in the Heart. Music in the Heart.
Grace
like,
in My Heart? No.
It's something like Music in My Heart. If I had a Leonard Maltin here, I'd look it up for it. But anyways, the other one was John Landis, who went from comedy, straight comedy,
American Werewolf in London.
American Werewolf in London, yeah. And he's gone back and forth between those two genres, which is amazing. But
I like that, because then you get the thriller video.
Yeah, and he's out of control. But what's really funny is
Landis rules. That's
he does rule.
He'll be in anything. He does the.
He's passionate about.
Love it.
Listen, but he's really passionate about horror films. And I've seen some interviews with him where, like, his favorite movies are all the old Universal stuff. And there was a time where there was really close to getting made, Creatures from the Black Lagoon in 3D. He got, this is in the 80s, right after he did American Werewolf in London, he got the okay from Universal Studios to shoot Creature from the Black Lagoon, again, in 3D, with the same director. He was just going to put the money up for it. And what happened was, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Jaws 3D killed the 3D.
It did. It killed it
for a while.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, until now, but it killed it. It's starting to come back a little bit.
It's starting to come back, you know, the night.
But in the
80s,
there was, Space Hunter 3D, and all
right,
those 3D
right,
movies.
Right, right, right. Oh, another director that did that, Bill Castle.
Yes,
we're gonna keep going further back now.
Yeah, that's
until
awesome.
We get to even, like,
I like it.
He had the whole spine tingler. He had the whole everything from the skeletons in the actual theater. You had the actual buzzers on the back of your seats. He did the whole audience participation. Then he comes up with Rosemary's Baby.
Complete jump.
And this was gonna be his big thing. And this might have been the thing that could even I think even his daughter said this might have been the thing that killed him. Was the fact that he didn't wind up directing it. You know, he was in it.
He wanted to direct it.
He wanted to direct it more than anything. And
he had that thing from Baby.
No.
He had that thing from Baby.
It was his baby. There, if anybody wants to talk about, you know, my company, I always say it's my baby. What else? Anything you do, a script, you call it your baby. If you have a good meal at you, this is my baby. You know, you take it, trust me.
Maybe afterwards.
dropping a baby off. This was his baby, and I felt so bad because he had brilliant ideas, but he never called them his baby, and I think that's so freaking cool. It's like, he just thought they were the greatest inventions ever. They were inventions, but then there was something like Rosemary's Baby that was it. This was going to make him a name. Like, oh my God, take this guy seriously. He's not just like fake blood pouring through aisles or, scaring you. And I thought William Castle... If anybody has never seen a William Castle film, the best thing to do is IMDb him, Netflix him all the time, and just go through his genre of films. But then the best thing also is a new documentary out called Spine Tingler that plays in festivals. It should be having a DVD release soon.
That was terrific.
Great, great doc. Fantastic doc. Say that.
No.
What did you just write?
I wrote down David Lynch because, yep. I mean, David Lynch, we're... when we see a David, when you go to a David Lynch film, you expect a certain thing, right? You expect a certain type of film, and you go in there. Then he completely did a 360 on us.
Which
and brought
one?
Us Straight Story.
No.
Did he do that one?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Which is completely different than every other film he's ever done.
I think he can easily, when you see Eraserhead and after Eraserhead...
Me do Elephant Man.
Exactly. I think that would be his...
More mainstream.
But that even had its creepiness.
But that was mainstream, but he had black and white and all that. But I mean...
He made his name, though.
But I'm saying jumping genre. I'm talking about jumping genre. He jumped genre. Straight Story was... Yeah, all those movies, all those David Lynch films, I always think like they're kind of they have little elements that are
they're
weird
bizarre.
And different.
Yeah, he's got bizarre.
Straight Story is a G. It's a family film.
Yeah, it's a Disney film, G rated film that you are going.
Believe it or not, David Lynch made a G rated family film, and it was good.
It's a great film. And then the sad thing is the reason why it's so good even to this day is the you always say I'm very sensitive.
Yeah,
Richard Farnsworth killed himself months later after that film.
I know, how terrible is that?
And never was able to hear his name. He was nominated for an Oscar. He was nominated for an Oscar for that film. Never got to hear his name, you know, announced on live TV for, you know, best actor goes to. And, of course, it didn't go to Richard Farnsworth. But, oh, man, there's a whole other podcast
right
there.
No, that's a whole other podcast, right.
I think we're going to see it coming in February. It is now January. I don't know what they're doing with the Oscars this year, but...
No, you're right. You're right completely, and it's going to happen again. But It's really weird. That movie's on an island, though, for him. It did really well. It's a really oddball thing. It did really well. It wasn't like Wes Craven's Music by the Heart or the hell it was.
Yeah.
It didn't do well. It was decent, but it didn't do well.
Spacek, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you said Meryl Streep.
Ms. Meryl Streep
was in it. Yeah, Sissy Spacek. Which, I'll be mentioning a lot of Sissy Spacek in my next podcast.
Yeah, right.
Not on this one, but
another one. But no, I think that movie was on an island. Then he went back to making those crazy movies again. Mulholland Drive, which is completely opposite of everything he just built himself up to.
Didn't Disney say, "All right, let's get you back into ABC"? And he's like, "I love it." And then he wound up making Mulholland Drive. There was like what, two episodes there, and the next thing you know, it's like it doesn't work. Throw some lesbianism in there.
And right back to the David Lynch we all know.
Yeah.
And will he ever go back to that again? I don't know.
I think so.
Right now, it's just an island in his career. It's really weird.
What the hell is he doing? I didn't see...
It's a bizarre thing. He made more money at that probably than anything else.
On a podcast, I didn't see a David Lynch film. Shit. I didn't see Inland Empire. I didn't see it yet.
Looked at how much time there was in the film.
Yeah.
And it was like 75 hours, and I was like, I did not have 75 hours of my life to spare.
Yeah, Soderbergh, so Jesus. Come on.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
That
doesn't have to be 4 hours.
Oh, God. You don't have to, especially about Che. Please, I already saw Motorcycle Diaries. I have my Che for the decade. No, I'll see it. I'll see Che. I'm not a big Soderbergh fan, so. Man, I am losing listeners by the minute.
That's why we're not in New York right now. We're here in Orlando. We can talk about what we want.
Yeah. There was something I was going to mention with David Lynch, and see, I need to be.
Do you want to hold it for the next podcast? Want
to edit? Yeah, because we're going down. So, all right, let's do that.
Okay.
Say goodbyes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Jeffrey Sanis, Movie Brain Rot.
I'm Brian Quain, Before You Submit, and, thank you. Also, you can check out our MySpaces, our Twitters, and I'm getting you on Facebook. You can also find us on Facebook. We're on there. So, again, thank you guys, and we'll be back.